Merrill.
Good evening. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thank you. How are you?
Doing well. You're the first to arrive, so we're going to wait a few more minutes.
Oh. Okay. Are we going to be working from the home Montgomery site?
Yes.
Okay.
For the book
Brandon.
Of Joshua.
Okay.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
We'll be starting in about another minute. Give people a chance to get online. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm just going to have to find out where you are because we're expecting the doctor from Lafayette to call, and it's a virtual call on my cell.
I hear you.
Okay.
We'll be starting momentarily.
Okay. They said to expect anything from 1:15 to 2, so.
Understood. So we will be starting with Olushen Yehud, but I will explain where the handout is and where the reading from the Machon Mamre can be found. So if you go to the Revealed Wisdom Matrix, which is a page on the Yeshem webpage, and if you go to row 6 of the matrix, the third column from the left, which is titled the Parasha Landing Pages, in essence. When the landing page opens up, scroll down to the book, the Sefer Joshua. And we will be starting with chapter 4 today. So what opens up from that link of chapter 4 is our commentary for the book of Joshua. But the first thing you will find in that commentary is the link to the Machon Mamre website for the book of Joshua. And that's where we will be starting today in reading both the Hebrew and the English.
Okay, I'm going to mute.
L'shem Yehud Kudsha Barichu Ishkinte Bivchilu Urchimu Utkilu Utkilu Urchimu Le'achda L'shem Yudhe Bavavhe Ve'yehuda Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La'asok Torah Mitzvah Vayihino Amadunai Elohinu Aleinu Ma'asei Yadeinu Kunenei Aleinu Ma'asei Yadeinu Kunenei. Chapter 4 of the book of Joshua, verse 1. We do that in the Hebrew. Vayhi kasher tamu kol hagoy lavor et hayarden vayomer Hashem el Yehoshua lemor. And it came to pass when all the nation were clean, passed over the Jordan. Then the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, verse 2, Kehu lachem min ha'am shenem asar anashim, ish echad mishavet. Take you 12 men out of the people, out of every tribe, a man. It's important to recognize the Hebrew word that is being translated as men, as anashim. And we've spoken about this earlier, that there are different words referring to mankind and men, which sometimes it includes men and women, and sometimes it's specifically a male orientation. And sometimes it's a different spiritual level. The word anashim comes from the generation of Enosh. And what Enosh did, what his generation did, and he was basically the third generation after Seth, the next child. Seth had a son, Enosh. And the generation of Enosh essentially started idol worshiping by worshiping the stars and the planets and becoming involved with astrology. Now, why this, in the book of Joshua, this name is used is open to speculation. I haven't heard any, I haven't read any aspect that explains why that name is used for this generation. But this chapter is going to be talking about the crossing of the Jordan River and then the entry into the land. I'm going to read the third verse in Hebrew, and then we'll probably just stay with the English. Wutsa'u otam le'mor se'u lachem mizeh mitoch ha'yardein mimatzav rad le'. Hakohanim, Hakin Shetem, Esre Avanim, Vaha Avartem, Otam Imachem, Vahinachtem, Otam, Bamalon Asher Talinu, Lohalaila. And command them, saying, take you hence out of the midst of the Jordan, out of the place where the priest's feet stood, 12 stones made ready, and carry them over with you, and lay them down in the lodging place where you shall lodge this night. This was the instruction for the 12 Anashim, the 12 men, the 12 which we would assume would be leaders of the tribes. And that may be why it's being used as Anashim, because they weren't the leaders of the tribe, because they had to carry these rocks. Verse 4. Then Joshua called the 12 men, who whom he had prepared of the children of Israel, out of every tribe, a man. And in this case, we're not talking about Anashim, we're talking about Ish. So the preparation by Joshua elevated the spiritual level of the people involved. So they've changed from being an Enosh, which is considered a lower level of mankind, a lower level of man, and elevated him to that level of Ish, which is not necessarily the highest level, but it is a higher level than Enosh. The fifth verse. And Joshua said unto them, pass on before the ark of the Lord, your God, into the midst of the Jordan, and take you up every man of you a stone upon his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel. So were there 12 stones, or were there more stones based on the number of how many people were in each tribe? The language in the translation isn't clear. Verse 6, that this may be a sign among you, that when your children ask in the time to come, saying, what mean ye by these stones? And verse 7, then ye shall say to them, your children, because the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of Hashem, when it passed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. And these stones shall be for a memorial unto the children of Israel forever. Verse 8. And the children of Israel did so as Joshua commanded, and took up 12 stones out of the midst of the Jordan, as the Lord spoke unto Joshua, according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel. And they carried them over with them unto the place where they lodged, and laid them down there. So it's now clear that they took up 12 large stones. Verse 9. Joshua also set up 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests that bore the Ark of the Covenant stood, and they are there to this day. And there has been a discovery of these rocks in the Jordan River itself, not next to it, as would be implied from the language. But what does that mean? It means over the centuries that the river changed its course slightly. Verse 10, and the priests that bore the ark stood in the midst of the Jordan until everything was finished that the Lord commanded Joshua to speak unto the people, according to all that Moses commanded Joshua. And the people hastened and passed over. The translation of the word Vayavoru, the last word in the verse in Hebrew, I'm uncomfortable with that translation, but I'm not familiar with the shorish of vayavoru is ever, ayin bet resh. And I'm not familiar with that shorish to be able to really address what it should be or what is the correct, but I'm uncomfortable with the words passed over, because I'm not sure what it means. Did they walk across on land? The waters had been split. What is the meaning of passed over? And if you look at the letters, you have the letters ayin bet in the middle of the word. And ayin bet, it refers to the 72 names of Hashem. The 11th verse. And it came to pass when all the people were clean, passed over, then the ark of the Lord passed on, and the priests before the people. So the image that's being expressed here is that the priest walked into the river with the ark, or the ark went into the river by itself, flying, essentially. It's not clear. And when the ark was in the middle of the river, the water split, and the ark stayed there while the people passed over. And then when the people passed over, whatever passed over means, then the ark moved on and joined them on the other side of the Jordan River. The 12th verse. And the children of Reuben and the children of Gad and the half tribe of Manasseh passed on, armed before the children of Israel, as Moses had spoken unto them. I'm putting a past tense to this language. But this is the discussion that the tribe of Reuben and the tribe of Gad and half of the tribe of Manasseh chose to stay on the opposite side of the Jordan, but Moses would only agree to that if they would help to conquer the land. And so these two and a half tribes always led the fighting. Verse 13. About 40,000 ready, armed for war, passed on in the presence of the Lord unto battle, to the plains of Jericho. If you go back to the number of the tribe of Reuben and Gad and the half of the tribe of Manasseh, it was significantly more than 40,000 men. So essentially what you're learning here is that when you go to war, you also protect your families. Verse 14. On that day, the Lord magnified Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they feared him, as they feared Moses, all the days of his life. And so we are told that Joshua, by being involved in the splitting of the Jordan River, became the leader. He was the leader because Moses had told them he was the leader. And God had told Moses, invest Joshua as the leader. But there's a difference between being told something and accepting your own decision about it and choosing who will you follow, who will be your leader. And this verse is explaining to us that the people, by virtue of the miracle performed, made it their business that Joshua was now their leader. Verse 15, and the Lord spoke unto Joshua, saying, It's interesting to understand. There's a break in the scroll here. At the end of verse 14, there's a pay in the Hebrew. And that's an indication that there's a break, an opening. And there are different size openings. This is an opening of about 16 letters. Why 16? Because 16 is the male numbers, the sharing numbers, or sharing letters of Hashem's name, Yud and Vav. What's interesting to me is this is the way that the Torah tells us we're going to be talking about something else. And yet it's in the same chapter, so it has to do with the idea of crossing the river. Verse 16. Command the priests that bear the Ark of the Testimony that they come up out of the Jordan. We were just told that they came up out of the Jordan. So now we're being told that Joshua was the one who ordered that. Verse 17. Joshua therefore commanded the priests, saying, come ye up out of the Jordan. Follow the Torah's descriptions. God says to the leader, whether it's Moses or Joshua, and then the leader says to the people. And part of the language of saying to the people, then there is a third step, which is that the people did what they were told. There's a spiritual lesson in that sequence. Perhaps we'll have time to talk about it. Verse 18. And it came to pass, as the priests that bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came up out of the midst of the Jordan, as soon as the soles of the priest's feet were drawn up unto the dry ground, that the waters of the Jordan returned unto their place and went over all its banks as aforetime, as it was before. Why do we need to know that 33,000 years later? And the answer to that question is, people and the consciousness of people impact the physical world, the weather, the flow of rivers, the earthquakes, the hurricanes, the tornadoes. All of these natural events are controlled and affected by the work of man. And that's what this verse is essentially telling us. Verse 19. And the people came up out of the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month and encamped in Gilgal on the east border of Jericho. Verse 20, and those 12 stones which they took out of the Jordan did Joshua set up in Gilgal. Verse 21, and he spoke to the children of Israel, saying, when your children shall ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what means these stones? Verse 22, then ye shall let your children know, saying, Israel came over this Jordan on dry land. Didn't we already hear that? Wasn't that said earlier in these verses? Now, I know the answer to that question is yes, it was said earlier. So why did it need to be said again? Verse 23, perhaps we will answer it, perhaps not. These are the questions that people need to be asking. And then how you find that answer. You can follow other writers, other people who've studied these words before you, or you can meditate on yourself. You can invite the stones into your meditations and ask them why was it said twice about them. Verse 22. Then ye shall let your children know, saying, Israel came over this Jordan on dry land. Verse 23. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan from before you, until ye were passed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up from before us, until we were passed over. When the Yam Suf, which is the Sea of Limitation, was split, the Torah tells us the land was dry. Here we're being told that the land was dry also when the water split. It's a miracle. The question is, do you accept it as a miracle, or is it just a fable? The question is, what is the meaning of coming across on dry land? Verse 24, that all the peoples of the earth may know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, that ye may fear the Lord your God forever. The word fear is an improper translation. The word, the shorish of the word is yirah, or yiratem in this case, conjugated with for the plural. But yirah is a word that translates both as fear and as awe. But it's not fear afraid over the physical effects. It's having awe because of the physical effects. Understanding that nuance, and it's a very significant nuance in how we perceive these translations. Now let us return to the ARC commentary. And it starts with Hanoch adds, there are 24 verses in chapter 4. There were 24 verses in chapter 2 as well. The question I'm asking, is this the third day that being similar to the third day of creation? That's the fourth chapter, but the first chapter is an introduction. So we could consider the second chapter, the first day of creation, the third chapter as the second day of creation, and the third chapter, or the fourth chapter, is the third day of creation. We could consider it that, but is it valid? So the question is, if that's the idea, is it a connection to Tiferet being the third day of creation, or is it going to be Bina? If we start with Ketra, Chachma, and the third becomes Bina, or is it Dat, which is Chachma, Bina, and the third becomes dot. How do we explain the insertion of chapter 3, which is the energy of goodness having 17 verses? How do we explain that insertion between the 24 verses of chapter 2 and the 24 verses of chapter 4? And remember, in the days of creation, it does not say that the second day of creation is good. It says on the third day of creation that it is good, extra good, meaning good twice. And there's a lot of commentary about that. And does it relate to this commentary as well? And I'm ending this comment with a statement. Welcome to the tool of asking questions. I asked a number of questions through the reading. I've asked questions here in this first comment. By asking questions, you will get answers. Sometimes you have to wait for those answers. Sometimes the answers are not clear. But without asking the question, there is no learning. Without asking questions, there is no truth to be found. There is no vessel to reveal the light. In a question and answer session, the answers are the light, the questions are the vessels. Continuing, according to the Talmudic account in Sota, Sota is the ritual of a wife accused by her husband of adultery, and she has to be tested. If she is tested pure, not an adulteress, she receives a reward of a male child. And her husband knows he was wrong, and their marriage is healed. And if she is guilty of adultery, she dies a horrible death, and the adulterer, the man that she was with, dies a horrible death. The essential gist of which is quoted with characteristic brevity in Rashi's commentary on our text, the day of the crossing of the Jordan was one of superhuman activity by the 12 representatives of the tribe who took up stones from the Jordan to set up in Gilgal, and indeed superhuman activity by the entire people. This was a day to remember forever. What were they remembering? They're remembering entering the land. Altogether, there were three sets of stones. The first had been set up by Moses in the land of Moab. And on them he wrote the entire Torah. Then Joshua set up a second set of stones in the Jordan itself, while a third set of stones was taken from the Jordan and set up in Gilgal. The Torah was likewise written on these stones, all three sets. What do you think the purpose of the three sets of stones is all about? The archaeology has found recently the stones in the Jordan River, as the Jordan was lowering its water table, its water level, and now this year the rain has refreshed that and raised the water level. But while the water level, because of the drought for the last number of years, has lowered the level of the Jordan River, those rocks, those stones were seen, were found. There are the 12 stones in Gilgal, and there are the 12 stones in Moab. So the three sets of stones has been confirmed, which is different than what I described. And I described it in our reading for a purpose. But why would we need three sets of stones writing the Torah? Are they the exact same Torah? Were the words the same? And I'm asking that question as part of our commentary. Continuing. However, the third set of stones was not merely taken directly from the Jordan to Gilgal. According to the Talmud, on the very day of the crossing of the Jordan, the entire people journeyed to Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal. They built an altar, they coated it with lime, and wrote the entire Torah on it. Offered burnt offerings and peace offerings, they ate and drank, recited the blessings and the curses, all in accordance with Moses' instructions. It was only after this that they took the stones that same day and carried them to Gilgal, where they were set up to educate the future generations. With that understanding, we can relate to why this was a miraculous extra effort day, as was said earlier. I am asking the questions, why is it done in this process? What level of midrash is this story? What is taught by a deeper look into the names mentioned? Thus, on the very day of their entry into the land, the children of Israel wrote the Torah not merely on parchment, but onto the very rocks and boulders of their new land. The whole purpose of this was to teach their children and descendants in all the generations to come a profound lesson about how Hashem works through history. It was through the power of God's covenant inscribed in His holy Torah that the children of Israel entered their land, using the stones to stimulate the children's curiosity and give them a lesson in history. And this is reminiscent of the annual Seder night recalling the Exodus. The ancient idolaters, including the Canaanites, were wont to set up stone circles as part of their highly sophisticated systems of worship of the stars. The 12 stones of the 12 tribes, corresponding to the 12 signs of the zodiac, were the ultimate tikkun, or repair, for the idolatry of the other nations. That is one explanation. There are 69 other explanations. More miracles. Chapter 4 in verses 10 and then 15 to 19 go back to narrate further miracles relating to the splitting of the Jordan. It was only when the priests carrying the ark first dipped their feet into the water by the east bank of the river that the main miracle, the splitting of the river, occurred, enabling the entire people to cross on dry land. Rashi, reflecting the Talmudic discussion, which is based on hints in our text, explains that after the people crossed the river to the west bank of the Jordan, the priests returned with the ark to the east bank. The moment the priests stepped out of the water, the river returned to its normal flow, after which the priests crossed the river over the flowing water, carried by the ark, thus graphically showing the entire nation that the ark carries those who carry it, and not vice versa. The Torah may seem like a heavy yoke, but in fact, it carries those who practice it. It carries them above and beyond nature. The lesson of this unforgettable day in the history of the children of Israel is summed up by the concluding verse of our text. In order for all the peoples of the land to know that the hand of Hashem is mighty, in order that you should fear Hashem, you should have awe of Hashem your God all of your days. That's the end of our class. Does anyone have any questions, or perhaps answers to the questions I have phrased? We will have two more classes tonight. One is at 4:30 West Coast time, and that's a deep Zohar class. One is at 7 p.m. West Coast time, in which we will count the Omer, as well as study the writings of the Ari, Rabbi Isaac Luria, for the Parasha of Emor. I remind you that Pesach Sheni, a very unusual holiday, takes place on Friday. What is Pesach Sheni? It's the energy of second chances. What is your second chance? Your second chance is manifested by eating matzah Friday during the day, and some people will eat it Friday night, just like they do with the Seder. You eat it on the evening of the 15th day of Nisan. You can eat the matzah on the evening of the 15th day of Iyar. Are there any questions? You all have a beautiful afternoon, and I hope to speak to you later tonight. Shalom Gadol. Shalom to all.
Shalom. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Shalom.